listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Thanks for downloading the show. I'm Rob Daly. This week, the top two in Italy met in Turin, and we speak to BT Sports commentator for the game, Adam Summerton, to discuss a big result for Juventus over Napoli. Plus, we ask Adam about PSG's Serge Aurier, who has been suspended by the club after insulting teammates and his manager Laurent Blanc in a video posted online.
I just don't know what was going through the guy's head. And what I would say about Serge Aurier is that this is a real shame, because on the pitch this season, whenever I've seen him and PSG, his energy up and down that right flank has been absolutely fantastic.
So is there any way back for the defender in a week when PSG face Chelsea in the Champions League? We look at the week's upcoming action in that competition and the Europa League. Plus, we speak to the Times' Spanish football writer, Joseph Casinelli, as Barca work magical penalty tricks. And he sees Gary Neville gets his first La Liga win as Valencia boss.
I think the exact quote was, "Relief is probably a good word," when asked to describe his emotions. You know, he didn't make a big deal out of the win. He was actually very, very calm. There was no singing, no dancing. He said, you know, this is the first step on a long road ahead.
Iker Casillas shows he's still got it for Porto. Plus, we look at the latest Bundesliga headlines as well, as a 28-year-old takes charge of Hoffenheim.
This is Football in Europe.
Don't forget to keep tweeting us using FIE Podcast. We'll read out some of your messages later in the show. And please leave us a review on iTunes if you have the time. Joining me this week with Chris Parrott away is Adam Summerton. Adam, thanks for coming on the show.
That's all right, no problem.
You've got to rush out this morning, haven't you?
Yeah, it's half term, Rob, so kids trip out day out. So it's a bit mad at the house, but yeah, I've managed to sort of pat them off into a corner for 10 minutes.
Just pen them in, just lock them away. Because obviously you've had a great couple of days covering the Serie A for BT Sport, and most notably, and we'll start with Saturday night, because biggest game of the season, probably Juve-Napoli, the top two in the league. Napoli were top going into it, but Juve... winning 1-0, people probably would have seen that. It was even a game that I saw American politicians getting involved with.
Yeah, the mayor of New York was tweeting his support for Napoli, which was just one of the... I mean, I have to say, Rob, as you know, when you're prepping for games, you do your research and you sort of translate maybe Italian newspapers, things like that. I can't remember a game for some time with quite so many column inches, and not just in Italy, but around the world. And that was one such example. I have to say that I really, really bought into the hype personally, maybe a little bit naively. I thought this was going to be the greatest game ever. I really did think it was going to be absolutely outstanding. It wasn't. It wasn't a classic by any stretch of the imagination. And I think in part the reasons for that were that there was a lot of mutual respect around. They both knew how dangerous each other could be. And I think that the difference between Napoli and maybe Roma over the last 2 years is where I think that Roma weren't quite as good as Juve. I think Napoli probably are. Not necessarily their experience, where Juve have got the massive upper hand, and that could prove crucial in the end. But just in terms of a 1-11, I think Napoli are just about as good as Juventus. So I think that as well maybe told in the approach from Juve to the game. And they had to change to a flat back four, which I think really affected their fluidity. They lost... Bonucci partway through the second half as well. So maybe Napoli might see it as something of an opportunity miss, Rob, because they just didn't get Higuain involved in the game anywhere near enough. And Insigne was nowhere near his usual standard either. So, yeah, frustrating for Napoli, but and maybe a little bit fortunate for Juve that they won it. But you've got to credit Zaza and Allegri for bringing him on, I guess.
Yeah, Simone Zaza is turning into something of a super sub. I mean, his goals per minute rate is quite ridiculous at the moment. We had this tweet in for you, Adam, from Stuart. It says, Zaza is perfectly suited for that impact sub role. If Dybala and Morata or Mandzukic can wear down defences, Zaza can reap the rewards. What is his position in the team? And maybe tell us a little bit about the goal itself that won it, what was it, 88th minute or something like that for 1-0.
It was a good goal. It was aided by a wicked deflection, though, I have to say that, which really deceived Reina. Whether it would have gone in without that deflection, who knows? But it was, you know, a good shot, really got hold of it. In terms of his where he is in the pecking order, I personally think that when Mandzukic is fit, he plays up front with Dybala, who's the first choice. That's my own opinion. I think Morata perhaps is close to him, but he's just not scoring enough goals this season. Really isn't contributing very much at all in that respect. Although I think about half of his appearances have been from the bench, Morata, this season. So Zaza is probably fourth choice. You look at Napoli, and if Gonzalo Higuain gets a serious injury that just, say, hypothetically kept him out for a couple of months, I think Napoli probably are struggling to recreate anything like the level of consistency that they've showed. Whereas Juventus have got four very good centre-forwards there. And then you look, for example, at the back as well. They lost Chiellini before the game. They lost Bonucci during the game. And on comes Rugani, who for me is one of the best young centre-halves in Italy, if not in Europe, who just can't get a game. So again, that is where Juventus perhaps have the edge on Napoli. But yeah, you're absolutely right to highlight Zaza's, you know, in terms of his minutes on the pitch to goals rate. I think he's only had three starts this season, if memory serves me right, and he's scored four goals. So he's staking his claim for a regular place. But as I say, I still think Mandzukic and Dybala would be Allegri's first choice front two.
Another tweet in from Luca Cilotto. He says, I think Zaza is the kind of player that can show his best when he's put on into a match during the match to cause problems because of his physical qualities. Luca also says Juve deserved to win because they really tried to score until the 90th minute despite having few chances. He felt that Napoli just kept possession. Matt Amalfitano felt that a draw would have been a right result. Where does this leave Napoli now? They're 1 point behind Juve, but in terms of the psychology of losing to the team who are battling with you for the title, I mean, we've seen that in the Premier League this weekend. What do you think this does to Napoli in terms of their title push?
Well, this is a little bit of the unknown, isn't it? We're not quite sure how Napoli will respond. I think psychologically, they've maybe proved quite a few people wrong in that when they were in front, it didn't seem to affect them that much psychologically. You see some teams who are quite happy chasing, but when they get out on top, suddenly the pressure tells. We didn't really see that with Napoli. I don't think we can read too much into a one-off game so narrowly decided against the champions. But how Napoli go from here is going to be really interesting. The next league game is at home in Naples against Milan, a Milan side who are showing their best form yet this season, certainly under Mihailovic. So That's going to be a really interesting game to see how they respond to this. But it's another test of character. And if you're going to beat Juventus to the title in Italy, if you're going to stop them making it five in a row, you've got to pass those tests of character. So it's interesting. I mean, you can't argue that it isn't a big psychological blow. Of course it is. Up against your direct rival for the title, losing so narrowly. But I just think under Sarri, they've got the right manager to reorganise, get them ready again, get them refocused. He's a good tactician too. So I still think there's a lot of life left in the title race. But as Allegri said himself, Juve are now the favourites.
They are, and they're top. What is that, 15 wins in a row, league wins in a row? Amazing. And on the subject of Paul Pogba, his agent has come out in the last sort of 24 hours, I think it is, on Twitter to say that Pogba's not going to go to Barcelona. It was after a report in one of the Catalan papers, Sport, I think, that... Do you see Pogba leaving at the end of the season? Do you see him staying beyond this campaign? Because many people probably wouldn't have expected him to stay even this long in Turin.
Well, I think the desire of Juventus is certainly to keep him. There doesn't seem to be any noises coming from Turin that they want to sell him. But it's just like any transfer, any player, Rob. Everybody has their price. And if the offer comes in that is just too hard to turn down, I'm sure that, you know, that they would have to consider it. I was interested to read just this morning, actually, that he was talking about how Zinedine Zidane is his idol, the man he wants to be like. So I thought that was interesting. Wow. Apparently, he got some advice from Messi at the Ballon d'Or as well. So, you know, he's a player, Rob, whose ambition is limitless. You know, he says quite simply, I want to be the best in the world. Another thing that he said just recently, I think he's still got developing to do, Rob. And I think that actually the best place for him right now, and in my opinion, going forward for at least another season, is Juve, is Turin, is Serie A.
Yeah, you've said this to me before. There's a couple of slight reservations with you about Pogba.
Yeah, there are. I think he's an absolutely fine player. Let's make no mistake about that. And I think that he can probably achieve the ambitions that he set himself. But there have been games this season and last where I don't think that he's hit a consistent level throughout. Yes, we'll see flashes of brilliance. Yes, we'll see some wonderful goals. But I just think, particularly wearing this number 10 shirt as well now at Juve, I just think he's got another level to go up. I really do. And he's probably, in my opinion, best getting to that level at Juventus before he moves on. I just think there's more developing to do with Paul Pogba is probably the best way to describe it.
Okay, fair enough. And also, you mentioned that Messi gave him Pogba some advice. It wasn't dress sense. Because, I mean, Messi dressed, he kept things pretty reserved at the Ballon d'Or this year, and Pogba went all out.
He had a new haircut at the weekend as well. His brother, who's at Saint-Étienne, had a very similar one. I don't know if you noticed yesterday as well. I think they must go to the same barber, or the barbers visit the players these days, don't they, at the training ground.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audio Boom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
So there were, you're across two great games, two great stories anyway, certainly in Serie A this weekend, because I heard you on Sunday night on BT commentating on Fiorentina's 2-1 win over Inter. Inter really have fallen away in the race for the title, 12 points off Juve now. I mean, but tell the story of Fiorentina-Inter, because, I mean, this was such an exciting game between two teams who were in the title race until a few weeks ago.
Yeah, now very much in a battle between, well, four big clubs are battling for one place. If you presume that Napoli and Juve are going to finish in the top two, which I think is a fair presumption. So it's going to be an absolutely fascinating battle, this, for that third place. And this was a key game in it. And Inter took the lead, really, against the run of play. But it was a fabulously worked team goal, finished off by Brozovic. The assist was from Palacio. Fiorentina had started the game with a real high tempo, high energy, really pressing Inter. But that goal really knocked that out of them. And they struggled to recover from that. And you couldn't really see a goal coming for them in the second half. But they found one. And one of the smallest players on the pitch, Borja Valero, with a header, yet another headed goal conceded by Inter. They conceded three against Verona the week before, having not conceded at all from a header until the Milan derby. So that was interesting in itself. 1-1. Then there's a red card, a very harsh red card, in my opinion, for Alex Telles for a second yellow card. The replay showed that it was just a good tackle, that it shouldn't have been a yellow card. And then the winner came just a minute into added time. Babacar, who had come on in the 87th minute, making the most of a palm out by Handanovic after he'd saved a shot from Zarate. And it's a massive goal, that, Rob. Hugely significant result for Fiorentina in that race for third. They're in pole position. It's theirs to lose. And I should mention as well that the chaotic end to the game where we saw... it was just bizarre, really. We saw Zarate sent off for... I'm not quite sure what he did to... I'm trying to remember who the Inter player it was. I think it was Murillo. I'm not even quite sure what he did, but he seemed to do something to the back of his neck. He got a red card. And then Kondogbia at the final whistle got sent off for applauding in front of the referee. So three players sent off. It was just a farcical end to the game. But Inter had a media blackout after the game, refused to do any interviews afterwards. So they were very unhappy. Clearly, it was a very different story with Fiorentina, who I'm sure were singing from the rooftops.
Okay, Tottenham fans take on... We'll talk about Fiorentina later in the show in a bit of a Europa League preview, because obviously that tournament and the Champions League is back this week. And Adam, we'll talk about Paris Saint-Germain shortly in that bizarre Sergio Aurier story. But Palermo have just rehired Beppe Iacchini. Now, he was fired 3 months ago, but Palermo chop and change the same managers over and over again. I mean, for someone who doesn't know much about Palermo, can you even begin to break down exactly what happens there?
Oh, dearie me. How long have you got? I mean, with Palermo, yes, it looks like Iacchini is going to be coming back in. I'm trying to count up how many coaches that will be just this season. Does that make it four? What we're looking at here in terms of Palermo is that they could be sleepwalking into the relegation places. That's what Palermo supporters will be most concerned about, because it's just chaotic at that club right now. I mean, the players mustn't know whether they're coming or going. We all know about the president and how he can be trigger happy, and he's just got himself into a complete muddle. And I say it's common, it isn't common, but it does happen in Italy, where you wouldn't see it really that many other places, where managers are sat but they're almost sort of put in a holding area.
Yeah, because they're still sort of contracted to the club.
Yeah,
and so they can bring them back. Adam, I've got an answer for you. I think, looking at it, it's five different managers this season.
And this is why that they're sat where they are. They're 15th in the table, 26 points. And what the big concern will be for Palermo with this period of just incredible instability at the club is Frosinone, because Frosinone had a really big win at the weekend, a surprise win against an Empoli side who've played some very good football this season, one of my favourite teams to watch in Serie A. So they are, in my opinion now, a bit of a threat in terms to, well, the two Genoa clubs as well. I mean, we've talked so much, haven't we, about the race for the Champions League places, the race for the title in Serie A. Frosinone look like, and maybe even Carpi to an extent as well, who are 3 points behind Frosinone, they could really make a fist of this, surprisingly so, because I think people thought that those two newly promoted clubs would really drop off and end up just being completely cut adrift from the rest. That isn't happening. And the two Genoa clubs are under threat. Palermo are under threat. I think probably teams like Udinese and Atalanta will eventually be okay. I think they've probably got enough to stay up. But if I were a fan of Palermo, with what's going on there right now, I'd be pretty concerned about getting really sucked into those relegation places.
Elsewhere in Serie A at the weekend, Roma won 3-1 at Carpi. I think it was Edin Dzeko's first goal in something like 12 hours of Serie A football as Roma picked up that win. And Milan moved to within 2 points of Inter in fifth with a 2-1 win over Genoa. More from Adam in a moment, but next we're going to talk about La Liga.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
Joining us now on the podcast is Spanish football writer for The Times, Joseph Casanelli. Joseph, thanks for coming on the show.
No worries, pleased to be here.
At the weekend, you were at Valencia. All eyes on this game because of Gary Neville looking for that first La Liga win at the 10th attempt against an Espanyol side who haven't been doing too well themselves. And he did get it. So how relieved did Gary Neville seem to you in the press conference afterwards?
Yeah, he was palpably relieved. He did say in his press conference afterwards that relief, I think the exact quote was, relief is probably a good word when asked to describe his emotions. You know, he didn't make a big deal out of the win. He was actually very, very calm. There was no singing, no dancing. He said, you know, this is the first step on a long road ahead. He was very, very adamant that, you know, that Valencia have been better than the form that they've been showing. And he felt that, you know, this is the reward for their good performances. He said that it wasn't their best performance, and I would agree with him. There were better games that he didn't win. But football was also a little bit about luck, and he deserved his little stroke of luck, I think.
I'll ask you about the game in a moment, but on the in terms of the media coverage, as an Englishman based in Madrid, how many English press and how much media attention is Gary Neville getting from over here in England?
Yeah, it's quite funny in the way that the worse the results get, the more attention he was getting. actually saw him and kind of shared a little joke with him, which, you know, you must be getting sick of seeing more and more of us week after week after week, and he'll be hoping now that he's actually got his first win under his belt and things might take off that he'll start seeing considerably less of us, because I think that the interest did, there was obviously a lot of interest when he first got the job, firstly because of the intrigue of Gary Neville, the England assistant manager. He is a huge name, obviously very famous pundit on Sky Sports, and Valencia is a huge club. There was a lot of interest at the start. He then didn't, you know, it was then his first couple of games were of interest, then it kind of died down a bit, but as the results got sort of gradually not necessarily worse and worse, but, you know, he went 9 league games without a win, which at any club is, you know, managerial sacking would be talked about. And as the games sort of accrued, he got more and more attention, and the sort of requests for pieces and more words got bigger and bigger and bigger. So it definitely caught up ahead of steam, so he'll be relieved to have got that win under his belt.
On the topic of the game itself as well, Joe, so they beat Espanyol 2-1. From what I saw, it perhaps wasn't the most convincing performance, but did they deserve the win on the day?
Ooh, that's a good question. it was not the most convincing performance whatsoever. The first half was very, apart from one absolutely outstanding Diego Alves save from Felipe Caicedo, the former Manchester City player, in the first half. It was very even. Both sides were kind of testing each other out. But in the second half, Espanyol took the lead shortly after the break, and they should have been 2 or 3 nil up. They had a couple of chances. Alves made... He was probably at fault for the goal because he came for a cross and got nowhere near it, and Oscar Duarte headed in. But then he made up for it with another couple of very good saves from close range to keep the score at 1-0. And then Alvaro Negredo, who got sent on as a substitute by Neville, got a slice of luck, deflected goal to make it 1-1. And then once it was 1-1, Duarte again headed wide from, I think it was from a corner, he headed wide. And within 15 seconds, Valencia were 2-1 up. It was very tight margins, and I think that it was certainly the luck changing.
Something I was wondering about whether they do, because I doubt Sir Peter Lim would make the step to sack Neville given their business relationship elsewhere. But a move has been made to bring in someone to help out Neville, which I think he actually confirmed at the press conference.
It was quite strange because at the very end of his press conference, he just said, look, I'm going to make an announcement and take no questions on it. And kind of everyone looked around like, oh my God, what's happening? Is he going to step down? And then he just said, look, Paco Ayestarán, who might be known to the English audience as Rafael Benitez, his former assistant coach when he was at Liverpool. They started working together in 1996 and worked together for 11 years before they fell out. And Ayestarán left Liverpool. He's also worked with the likes of Quique Sanchez Flores out in the Middle East, and he led Maccabi Tel Aviv as a manager to a historic treble last season. So he's very experienced. He speaks excellent English, which I think is going to help the sort of evident communication issues that Gary Neville has experienced. He's only been in Spain for 2 months. You can't really expect him to be speaking fluent Spanish. I don't expect anyone to have learnt a language within 2 months, no matter who they are and what their native tongue is. So he speaks both languages fluently, and I think he's going to serve as a conduit between both player and manager. And I think it will be a very good appointment. He's very well regarded as a coach and a tactical expert. So I think his knowledge of the club, because he's had two spells at Valencia, and his knowledge of the language will definitely help Neville.
So Neville's playing this as it's more his move rather than the club's move, that he was behind the idea to bring someone else in.
Yes, he said that that he came into the club and he said, I think I'm one of the only head coaches in world football ever to go into a club without taking any staff with them, which is true as well, because he essentially just sort of took on the staff that Nuno had under him, you know, brother Phil. He promoted Miguel Angel Angulo, who was working with the under-19s, and the goalkeeping coach was already there. So he's said that this is his decision. He said that firstly, before Christmas, after being at the club for 3 or 4 weeks, he started talking with the owners to assess the coaching situation. He said that he just felt he was very insistent that this was not a reflection on his current coaching staff. He said he was very happy with the job that they're doing, but he just felt that, I think the word he used, there was a void in his coaching setup that he needed to fill, and he wanted to get an experienced head in. And he said it's been on the card for 6 or 7 weeks. He's spoken with Paco for the past 10 days, and he made the decision to announce it and bring it in on Saturday.
So elsewhere in La Liga at the weekend, Barca beat Celta Vigo 6-1. Now, Celta Vigo did actually beat Barca earlier in the season, so this 6-1 scoreline is something of a surprise. And it was a great performance from the front three again, Suarez getting a hat-trick. There's a major talking point of the game. People may have seen something that was both brilliant and cruel in equal measure. One of those, it was a penalty for Barcelona that Lionel Messi stepped up to take, and rather than shooting, he passed it forward and Suarez put it into the net. Now, some people have taken this as, look, it's entertainment, it's a great thing to see. Other people have said it's a touch disrespectful. What have people been saying in Spain about this penalty?
Well, in Spain, in the papers this morning, it was sort of like eulogised as a moment of magic from the South American duo. You know, there's been no talk of... I haven't seen the local press in Galicia, and they might have a different take on it being where Vigo is. However, in the national press, certainly from what I've seen, they've said that they've sort of channeled the spirit of Johan Cruyff, who's obviously a Barcelona legend, because he's sort of done one of the most famous versions of this penalty with at Ajax when he was a player there. And it's been well received over in Spain. It certainly has. And I also think that one thing that's been overlooked is just how bad Barcelona's record from the penalty spot has actually been this season. Messi and Neymar have both missed a couple of penalties. I don't have the exact figures to hand, but I was at the 7-0 game when Barcelona absolutely battered Valencia. People forget that Neymar actually missed a penalty in that game as well, with some sort of ridiculous run-up, and he hit the post. And Barcelona's penalties this season, you know, have been found wanting. So I think it's quite a smart move in that, you know, if they keep doing this, then they should keep scoring and it might actually be more successful from the spot for them.
Barcelona in great form. They're into the Copa del Rey final, of course, after beating Gary Neville's Valencia. And they face Arsenal soon in the Champions League. And if any Arsenal fan sees the goals from that game, Barca 6-1 win over Celta Vigo, they might be even more concerned than they were before. Joe, Real Madrid. Zinedine Zidane prepares for his first Champions League game as manager of the club, but they got a win, a 4-2 victory over Bilbao. What are you making to Real Madrid at the moment?
Real Madrid's a funny one in that going forwards, they'd look $1 million, or as Real Madrid, probably their forward line more appropriate, $1 billion. But, you know, they're attacking-wise, you know, they're brilliant. Obviously, they're without Gareth Bale at the moment as well through injury, which I think is important to put out. And he'll obviously, when he comes back, he'll bring another dimension. He'll bring different style of play to James Rodriguez, who's currently occupying his position sort of in the front three. And Real Madrid going forward are absolutely brilliant. And, you know, when you've got the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo, Karim Benzema, James Rodriguez, Gareth Bale, et al. In your team, you know, you're going to score a lot of goals. The problem is, at the back, they do look quite shaky, you know. Aritz Aderiz could have had a hat-trick in the first half of this game. He was unlucky. I think he hit the woodwork and then forced Keylor Navas into a couple of very decent saves. And it could have been a different story. Also, Athletic had Iñaki Williams, who's been their standout player by a distance this season. He was suspended for this game. He might have given them a lot of trouble with his pace and power.
Joe, finally, you messaged me and said, don't be all Paxman on me when you get me on the show today. But just a quick one to finish.
Oh, dear.
Who's going to win La Liga?
Barcelona.
Thank you very much.
No worries.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
And a big thanks to Joe for joining us on the podcast. Adam Summerton is still with us, stepping in for Chris Parrott this week. Adam, Champions League is back, and we're actually working alongside each other on Tuesday. Roma, Real Madrid. How do you see this one going? Because Roma have been in great difficulties.
They have. And when the draw was made for this tie, I really, really badly feared for Roma. I had to say that it could almost get embarrassing, like it did for them at the Camp Nou in the group stage when they were on the end of a real hammering. But now I feel a little bit differently about it. Undoubtedly, Real Madrid are the big favourites, but there has been now a bounce for Roma under Spalletti. They're stringing results together. They're suddenly very much back involved in the race for third place in Serie A. And with Spalletti, you know, what's an intriguing thing about him in this tie is that, of course, he knows how to beat Real Madrid in the UEFA Champions League because he did it with Roma in his first spell in charge. So, yes, I know it's very different times. Yes, it's two very different squads of players. But I just think that's an intriguing little thing to throw into this tie. And Real Madrid, looking back at the record, I can't quote it right off the top of my head, but they don't have a great record in Italy in European competition. So that's another thing as well to throw into the mix. But yeah, I mean, if we're looking at it on paper, I would say 8-9 times out of 10, you would expect Real Madrid, with the quality that they have, to come through this tie. And obviously, Rob, another thing as well, the standout thing about this tie is that it's Zinedine Zidane's first ever match as a coach in the Champions League, a man who won it as a player with Real Madrid. How can he do it as a head coach now?
The other game, the other big game of the week, I suppose, of all the Champions League action is PSG-Chelsea. Now, from PSG's point of view, everything's going swimmingly, isn't it, Ad? You've won the league, basically. They've won the league already. They're able to rest a load of their players for the draw with Lille at the weekend. And then suddenly, on the eve of a Champions League game, this video appears of their defender, their brilliant defender, Serge Aurier, criticising his teammates. It was a Periscope video. I really don't understand how on earth he got himself in this situation. But you can see the video online. And he's basically taking questions from his mate about PSG's players. And he's criticised some of them. Di Maria, Cavani are criticised in the video. Ibrahimovic, there's a homophobic slur laid at the manager, Laurent Blanc. He has been suspended by the club. Is there any way back for Serge Aurier?
Well, I guess only time will tell on that. It's a horror show of a video. It's one of the singularly most stupid things I think I've ever seen or heard of. I just don't know what was going through the guy's head. I just really don't know. And what I would say about Serge Aurier is that this is a real shame, because on the pitch this season, whenever I've seen him and PSG, his energy up and down that right flank has been absolutely fantastic. I think he's really improved. He was a good player at Toulouse. I remember he was linked with Arsenal during his time at Toulouse. I think he's actually an Arsenal fan. I think he was pictured in an Arsenal shirt. That was another social media gaffe, I think, a long time ago.
Word gaffe, Adam.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it? But yeah, I think he just needs to stay off computers or certainly social media and just give it a rest, because he's a fine player and he's improved under Laurent Blanc, who he's apparently publicly apologised to.
But Rob,
when you see the things that he said, it's going to be very hard for him to go back into that dressing room and be able to look people in the eye, particularly his coach, who showed a lot of faith in him, actually. And I think Laurent Blanc perhaps deserves a bit of credit for helping develop him. I mean, Aurier's clearly done a lot of that work himself. But I just can't get my head around it. And it's an absolute last thing that PSG needed ahead of this game against Chelsea. A game that, by the way, for the first time in this sort of trilogy that they've had with Chelsea, I would say that they go into it as favourites, personally. And this is, for PSG, yes, Ligue 1, it's sewn up. I think they're, 24 points clear? You know, they're miles ahead in Ligue 1. That's a done deal. For PSG now, as a club, it's all about these games in the Champions League. That's everything is focused on that. All their preparation, everything is geared towards these games in the Champions League. And for this level of disruption just before it, I'll tell you what, in West London, they're going to be rubbing their hands about this, because, you know, it could potentially play into their hands, because we don't know what, you know, what's the reaction been behind the scenes? You know, players like Ibrahimovic, and what's he made of this? So, I don't know. If we're just to focus on in terms of a potential key player in the tie, for me, I wouldn't look. Yes, Ibrahimovic clearly is one, but Angel Di Maria is the player who potentially can take PSG in the Champions League to that next level. That's why he was brought to the club by his own admission. That's what he said when he signed. I'm here to get us that bit further in the Champions League. How much further they can go, who knows? But I think they just have to do that bit better, don't they, this time round. But it's going to be a great tie, no doubt about that.
I mean, you mentioned about players who are going to take PSG to that next level, because there are quotes doing the rounds of Eden Hazard saying, you know, eventually it would be difficult to turn down a move to PSG. He's only scored one goal in England this year, and I think that was a penalty in the FA Cup. I mean, he's just not the same guy. But do you see Eden Hazard fitting into PSG's team should a move like that happen? And I, you know, personally, I could see that happening.
Yeah, I could see it. I could see him definitely working there. It's hard to explain why he's not hit the same heights that he did in the previous season. I guess we can look into a lot of his maybe rumoured relationship and the problems that he had in terms of with Jose Mourinho. I know he said, didn't he, that he texted him or phoned him to apologise or say that he was sorry that he'd left Mourinho after Mourinho departed just recently. But yeah, it's hard to find. I just think he looks to me like a player who needs a change of scenery. That's just what it looks like. But it sounds almost silly to say that when you think how well he was playing less than 12 months ago, but it's just not worked for him at all, has it, this time round? And I guess a return to Ligue 1 where he did such wonderful things and won the title with Lille would make sense. I'm sure he's a player that would tick many, many boxes for PSG, and still so young as well. I would think it would take a very hefty fee to prize him away from Chelsea, but then that isn't too much of a problem for PSG.
Okay, Europa League chat on the way, but first let's have some of your European football headlines. Iker Casillas produced a number of brilliant saves to help earn Porto a 2-1 win at rivals Benfica. Vincent Abubakar got the winner in El Clásico. Sporting, though, remained 3-clear at the top in Portugal. PSV lead the table in the Eredivisie after a commanding 3-0 win over NEC. Chelsea loanee midfielder Marco van Hinkel made it 2 goals in 2 games since his move to Eindhoven. Johan Cruyff has described himself as being 2-0 up in the battle against lung cancer. The Dutch footballing icon praised doctors for their work treating the illness, which was confirmed back in October. In the Bundesliga, Bayern stay 8-clear after winning 3-1 at Augsburg, Lewandowski with 2. Pep Guardiola dedicated the win to defender Holger Badstuber, who has broken his ankle. 28-year-old Julian Nagelsmann became the youngest Bundesliga coach in history as his Hoffenheim side drew 1-1 at Werder Bremen. Nagelsmann was due to take over in the summer, but Huub Stevens had to step down as boss last week due to a heart condition. Leicester City's Andrey Kramaric put Hoffenheim in front. He was later sent off. Chelsea's Papis Gilabogi, yes him, got the equaliser. Dortmund beat Hanover 1-0 to stay close to Bayern, while Cologne celebrated their 68th anniversary with amazing crowd choreography ahead of kickoff and a 3-1 win over Frankfurt. And a final one from Germany, the Bundesliga could be getting video replays. The German Football Association, the DFB, are pushing for a 2-year trial of the replays to look at contentious decisions.
This is Football in Europe.
Okay, Adam, let's wrap up the podcast now by talking briefly about the Europa League. So Tottenham are taking on Fiorentina. What can Tottenham expect from Paulo Sousa's side? Because they've done very well this season.
They play some really attractive football. I think in Italy, some sides, they're finding it difficult to play their own game, increasingly difficult. As Rodriguez, their captain, said just recently, it's almost like clubs have found them out a little bit. They're third, they're in the box seat in terms of qualifying for the Champions League next season. I think there's a little bit of frustration at Fiorentina from the manager, some rumours falling out behind the scenes, denied by the club, that they're in a position to really kick on. And I think that Sousa wanted a bit more investment in the January transfer window that didn't really come. They did bring in Teo, they brought in Tino Costa, who you'll remember probably from Valencia, who brings plenty of experience. Zarate came in as well from West Ham. So there were additions, but I think they just wanted to do a little bit more. But they've got some really exciting players, Rob. I mean, Bernardeschi, for me, perhaps one of the most exciting young players in Europe. I thought that he had a decent game against Inter on Sunday night. So, you know, they beat Spurs at this point of the UEFA Europa League last season. So Spurs will know what they're all about. And Ilicic is a player who's been linked with Spurs in the past quite heavily, actually. He's been very good in Serie A this season. Probably, there's a few contenders, but probably Fiorentina's best player. He scored at 10 league goals and he's weighed in with 5 assists as well. So, you know, there are some of the danger men. Marcos Alonso, who Spurs fans might remember from Bolton. He was also at Real Madrid.
He's been great.
Yeah, he has. Yeah. Very effective down that left-hand side. And unfortunately for Spurs, he's just come back from injury as well. So the Kalinic, as it was brilliant in the first half of the season, is struggling to recreate that in terms of goals at the minute. I think he's got 1 in 14 now, where he was on fire in the first half of the season. But I thought he actually led the line extremely well against Inter on Sunday night. So they're a very, very difficult side for Spurs to negotiate in this round of 32.
I'll just run through some of the other exciting games in the Europa League this week. Dortmund take on Porto. That should be very exciting indeed. Manchester United face the Danish side Midtjylland, and I think they're still on their winter break. On paper, and it says a lot after United's recent performances, it should be relatively simple for them to progress from that tie, depending on the strength of the side that Van Gaal puts out in the competition. And Napoli go to Villarreal this week as well. Galatasaray host Lazio, should be an amazing atmosphere there. Marseille Bilbao's a game you're covering, Adam, but I just wanted to ask you briefly about Augsburg-Liverpool. A big win for Liverpool at the weekend with that 6-0 victory at Aston Villa. Augsburg beaten by Bayern at the weekend, not too surprising. But how important do you think the Europa League is to Jurgen Klopp now? Because, I mean, despite the win, Champions League football looks way off in terms of the top four in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think that just looking at Klopp just in the last few months, he's looked absolutely exasperated at the sheer volume of games that Liverpool have had to get. Every time I see him in an interview, he just looks a guy who's thinking, what are you English people all about with these games that you have at this time of the year, you know, without the winter break that he's, of course, been used to in Germany. It was just, and when they had the FA Cup replay and things like that, it was his post-match interviews were like, we have to play another game.
There was a great one where they said, Jurgen, thank you very much for talking. You know, it was after one of the FA Cup games. Thank you very much for talking to us. He says, I have to talk to you. I can't do anything else. But I mean, winning a trophy in his first season, I know they're already in the League Cup final, but that would be an achievement surely he's looking at now.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when you look at the credence that nations other, it would seem, than England give to the Europa League. Yeah. I think Klopp probably wants to stay true to that in terms of playing as strong a side as he can. But I think what we've also seen very interestingly at Liverpool is that he's almost been forced a little bit because of the injury problems that they've had and the amount of games that they've had as well to maybe turn to youth and rotate maybe more than he would have done. I'm not saying he wouldn't have rotated anyway, but I think it's given a great opportunity to some of their academy graduates and players who are very much on the fringe. I mean, one that really has shone out for me is Smith, the left back, who I think has really grabbed his opportunity in these cup competitions. So it's interesting for Klopp, this, in terms of what side he does pick, because you're absolutely right in terms of the Champions League qualifying for that. I think that's out of the question now for Liverpool. Yes, they've got a cup final to look forward to in terms of the League Cup, but I think he might see this as an opportunity in the Europa League. You would expect them to beat Augsburg. It's a real glamour tie, this, by the way, for Augsburg. I mean, there are some, these things are always debatable, but there are some are saying, look, this is the biggest game in their history, simply because of the prestige of Liverpool and their history, I guess. Augsburg playing in Europe for the first time. So it's a really interesting tie, this, and they generate a great atmosphere at Augsburg, you know, the supporters. They'll be massively up for it. So, yeah, I'm really interested to see what side Jurgen Klopp picks. It's a little bit of hard to get second guess him on that one, really.
Yeah, it is. And Liverpool come up against a striker in Raul Bobadilla, who tormented them in the Europa League a few years ago for Young Boys. But Augsburg doing poorly in the Bundesliga this season. They're 14th in the table and are without a win in all four of their Bundesliga games in 2016. Adam, thank you very much for coming on the show this week, mate. It's been really appreciated.
No worries, pleasure.
Are you looking forward to Marseille, Bilbao, by the way?
Yeah, I am. I think there's several really standout ties, really, in the Europa League, isn't there? I just think it's a brilliant competition. It's so hard to pick a winner from it. I mean, I've no idea, really, to be honest. I guess you could say Dortmund, couldn't you? But then they've got a tough time.
Let's have that.
Yeah, that would be good, wouldn't it?
We are back next Monday. Don't forget to tweet us using FIE Podcast. And you can follow our Audio Boom account for exclusive content. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes as well.
This is Football in Europe.